It is Garden Talk, hour number two, live from KSRO, News Talk Radio in Santa Rosa, California. I'm Steve Garner, along with Gwen Kilcher, celebrating our 32nd year of bringing you Garden Talk all throughout California and the magic of the internet, too. You can reach us at 636-1350 for a chat with Gwen and Steve on any gardening questions you might have. We are the remediation specialists here. We're hopefully to help you solve your problems, give you some inspiring information about how to approach your fall gardening, too. You can also communicate with us via email. It's simple, steve@ksro.com. And, of course, please enclose a photograph if you're so inclined, maybe a plant you'd like ID'd or a plant in distress or a bug you would like identified. Actually, bug identification might fall under the expertise of our guest in the studio, John Shrive, who, besides having a PhD in horticulture, received an MS in pest management from UC Riverside, BS in biology, and is one of the co-authors of this terrific and oddly addicting book that I've found myself going back to over and over since we've received it. It's called The Petaluma Wetlands Field Guide, and it was co-written with Marion Parker, who also has a magnificent bio here. She's the oldest of five children, which I should congratulate you for that. Yeah. So you had a lot of other duties besides raising those other four kids, those four siblings?
Well, they were all brothers, so just keeping in line was the main point.
And you hail from Minnesota?
Yeah, Minneapolis.
You're a lawyer.
That was my first incarnation, right?
I have to be careful about that. San Francisco Law School, 1978, practiced in San Francisco. Returned to study biology, science education at College of Marin, and then went on to earn a master's degree in marine ecology from Sonoma State in 2009, and has spent many years teaching. Are you still teaching?
No. I met John actually originally through the Petaluma Wetlands Alliance because we're both docents, but I taught at Casa Grande High School in Petaluma for a year with John.
Congratulations to both of you. This is a really terrific book. And I lived in Bloomfield. Are you familiar with Bloomfield, California?
Yes. Head out there, going toward Bodega Bay.
For many years back, 45 plus years ago, and used to spend a lot of time traipsing and doing trail walks. But this has really opened my eyes, this book, about how much I missed during the time of just blindly walking these trails and realizing how much beautiful plant material that I would have added to my enjoyment, and also the birds and migratory animals that frequent this area. You focused on the marshes area of Petaluma when you wrote the book. Is that correct?
Yes. Since we're with Petaluma Wetlands Alliance, and we help we do docent walks, we do education with the third grade students out there. We have a very large program. We teach up to 700 to 800 students every year. About anywhere from 25 to 30 classrooms come out every year, and we go classroom for a day, and then we do the field for a day. Mm-hmm. We have a restoration and maintenance crew. There's about five or six of us that go out on a weekly basis, and we taking out invasive weeds or cleaning up places, doing some trail maintenance. Right now we're also working on some benches and the kiosks, getting those up doing. So we actually work with the city and help them out. Originally, we got involved because we helped them with a $5 million grant they got from the Coastal Commission and a couple other. It was a combined grant. And so the wastewater treatment plant, the original spot for the city, we actually were instrumental and helped. That was my prior presidents of the organization. We were able to get in and convince other folks to put up $5 million to buy the land so that we have a wastewater treatment plant, which is a state-of-the-art out there.
Is that the one that has the rooftop garden?
Yes. It's a green roof on it.
I love that photograph of all the plants that thrive on top of this 12,000-square-foot rooftop garden.
Yeah, one of them also showed, I believe it was a killdeer on her nest. So so you actually, it's bird friendly as well. It's
and people, you can go on a tour and see that, can't you?
Yes, it's all on request. They kind of keep it pretty quiet out there, but you can go visit with them anytime and give them a call.
So what type of area are we talking about? Can you give us a visual?
Okay, if there's some maps in the book in the very front that I went and produced, one off Google and one off the city map. And there's three separate parks, sort of. And the northern park is Almond Marsh, which at one point was a The new Petaluma, which is some young guys were going to take over from all the shipping from the old Petaluma town. And they said, okay, these old crotchety old guys were taking control of all the shipping, and we're going to do that. This is back in the early, late 1800s. And they built new Petaluma there. And that eventually turned into a dump site, which is now Rocky Dog Park. Okay. And right next to that, though, is the area that when they moved the river, they actually hired some Chinese labor at first and then some local labor, and they moved the river away so that they could not use that new Petaluma town. Oh. So that area has now turned into and just naturally has restored itself into a native natural marsh area. Mm-hmm. So that's one area there. And that's Almond Marsh. That's on the north end. Then in the middle, we have Schollenberger Park. And the park is only actually the 3 feet on either side of the path. There's a six-foot path, and 3 feet on either side is the actual park. The rest of it is an industrial dredge spoils waste site. Oh, and so that's where for the dredging of the river gets put, and then after a while gets trucked out from there. That's where they do that.
Without dredging, the river would be unnavigable.
And as it is now, because it hasn't been dredged for 13 or plus years.
Yeah, in fact, our mayor is pushing for has been pushing a dredging petition because we're 15 years behind getting it dredged. Dredged, and at low tide, you can practically walk across if you dare.
Continue on.
Yeah. Okay, so Schollenberger Park is a man-made, engineered with dikes made from bay mud that are highly compacted. So, but it's the favorite park in town. 300 to 400 people come every day to walk it. It's the most populated park for people to come to because it's a perfect 2 mile walk. It's almost a 1 hour walk around. And everybody, so they park, they do their 2 mile walks, they jog, they ride their bikes, they come in, they get in the car and go home. And myself and my wife and others get out there frequently to go ahead. And a lot of dog walkers out there, kids strolling, older folks. There's a little section that is wheelchair accessible down to the river, to get down to the river to the dock area and back in a wheelchair if you need to. So that's all accessible. So lots of population there, but it's but because it's depressed ground, so the salt, the water goes salty, fresh, salty, more salty, and so that has to be watched over time. But lots of birds like that because lots of food gets generated there. And then you walk to Ellis Creek, which is the further south, which is the freshwater finishing ponds, and that's set up like a mouse. There's actually a saltwater harvest mouse, which is an endangered species. We're creating the habitat for down there. And that area, because it's fresh water and a little deeper ponds that are heavily managed because it's all being recycled water. So there's a different bird population and even a different, you'll find crustaceans and the red crawfish there, which is actually an imported food animal that actually escaped. And they grew it locally here and escaped out and is now found in the ponds there, and lots of other things. So that's a whole different population. And then we have a tidal marsh that actually the dike broke and the water flows in. And so that's a tidal flow. So you have lots of shore birds and mud-eating birds that are be found there. So the three different parks are different habitats, different waters, different salt contents, different slightly different. There's maybe a foot of elevation difference between here and there, but 1 foot in a salt marsh is a huge difference in water content, salt content, and the plants that you're going to see on top. And then the plants generate the food, which feed the animals. So you'll see a variety of habitats just walking through. You just have to pay attention to the various layers that are going on.
And this book will help us identify a lot of those areas.
Yes.
Gwen, it's so fascinating.
Isn't it? Adobe Creek. Why don't you talk about Adobe Creek for a moment?
Okay. Adobe Creek is a famous creek now. It's written up in the Japanese textbooks in science because Tom Furr, back about 30 years ago, took the challenge on and said, we got to save this creek. They're going to cement it. And he said, no, we can't let that happen. So he generated with some students, a group of students out there formed a club originally and said, okay, let's clean up this river. Let's do it right. So they went in and the students and Tom went in and cleaned out the parts of it, replanted willow trees mostly, just to get some greenery out and get some shade on this thing. And then over time, then start working on a hatchery, growing fish, and then putting those out in a small little operation, and eventually built it up to got a $2 million grant to build a full fish hatchery on site, at a high school site, run by the students.
At Casa Grande.
At Casa Grande. Yeah. So it's a famous site there. And so over time, it's actually transformed. It's overgrown, and now it's like, okay, we had to go back and clean up some of this stuff. But it's being managed by the students. They're still there working. Dan Hubacher is the new teacher that's taken over from Tom, who retired. And so that area is still being maintained, and fish are still being put in by the students.
I was impressed to realize that Petaluma Marsh System is one of the most important marsh systems in the country, not just locally in California.
Yes. Right. Yeah, we're very fortunate to live near such a rich environment, and that segues into talking about birds as well. We're in the middle of September, almost through September, and the annual fall migration of millions of birds is happening right now. And our wetlands are part of a system called the Pacific Flyway, and birds migrate from all the way up north of the Arctic Circle in some cases, coming down the Pacific coasts of the continents. And the Petaluma wetlands are a critical stopover for many birds that continue on their journey, and then a lot who overwinter here as well.
I was amazed to realize you said 350 different varieties of birds
are migratory.
An astounding number.
Yeah.
So this book that came out, Petaluma Wetlands Field Guide, how long has this been around, this book? Is it pretty new?
It just came out. It went to print in June.
Okay, so just a few months. Yeah. And you've been crisscrossing the county, appearing anywhere that people will have you, to talk about this book. You were at Copperfields, I understand.
Yeah. Last night we were at Copperfields. One of the interesting comments of one of the folks who visited us was that they were on the SMART train. And if you get on the SMART train and head down south, actually goes through a fair amount of the marsh, and you get to see it. And they were astonished at how many birds they actually saw off the train.
They should sell copies of this on the SMART train.
Yeah, that's exactly what one of our guests said. Have a little kiosk on the train. But it's a great reason to take the train from Santa Rosa down to Santa Fe.
Well, it's funny because I was looking at the map and I noticed the proximity to the SMART train. And I've taken the SMART train about a half dozen times. And I didn't think of it until I saw the map and go, I'm going right through this area. Yeah. I'll take my copy of this book next time I go down.
It's like a free safari.
What's the best way? Does Copperfield sell the book at the store?
Yes.
At all the Copperfields?
So we have several local places. So Copperfields here, I think Copperfields in Novato and maybe even Santa Rosa now have it. But there's several other locations around town, like the Visitor Center, which is right at the train station right there is the Visitor Center. So you can get it right there. Clavey Sports has it. The Seed Bank has it. Our museum has it. And a couple other local stores have it now, downtown area.
We'll take a break. It's the Petaluma Wetlands Field Guide. Marion had something to add before we
just,
take a break.
You can also order the book online at the Petaluma Wetlands website, and that's www.petalumawetlands.org.
Thank you. It's Marion Parker and John Shribbs, co-authors of the Petaluma Wetlands Field Guide, a Petaluma Wetlands Alliance publication. We can take Garden Talk questions too, of course, general questions at 636-1350. And of course, if you have questions for our guests about accessing the Petaluma Wetlands area and maybe some ideas for a trail walk of 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, I'm sure they can be your tour guide for that. Steve and Gwen in the KS Arnold Greenhouse at 11:05. It's the Good Food Hour with Chef John Ash. A tradition here as we go from the greenhouse to the kitchen. And we'll welcome marvelous Indian chef from San Francisco. Hital has written a new book called Milk and Cardamom. And I believe she's bringing some indigenous Indian sweets for us to taste. And one of you will win an autographed copy of her brand new book. Great article in the New York Times about her. So I know she'll be interesting to listen to this morning.
Sonoma County's local news, weather, and traffic station, FM News Talk, KSRO, 103.5, 94.5.
There's a better way to garden and landscape in Sonoma County, and it starts at a Better Way Produce and Nursery on Stony Point Road, just north of Todd in Santa Rosa.
Hi, Daniel R. Gibbs, botanical artist. I'm the award-winning resident licensed landscape designer and contractor. Our team once again has won first place at the Sonoma County Fair's Hall of Flowers. We invite you to the nursery, shop the multiple greenhouses, shade houses, and outdoor displays, and visit our Landscape Design Center to plan your garden retreat. The produce stand is open. We have heirloom tomatoes, including Cherokee Purple, Green Zebra, San Marzano, and Violet Jasper cherries.
Don't miss out on this beautiful selection of heirloom tomatoes at A Better Way Produce and Nursery. Plus, all the produce grown right here in Sonoma County. A Better Way Produce and Nursery, 3615 Stony Point Road, just north of Todd. Open 7 days a week, 9 to 4:30.
The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market is bursting with wonderfully fresh local fruits and vegetables from your favorite farmers and ranchers. There's an abundance and wide variety of heirloom tomatoes, early girls, beefsteak, sun golds, and more. Don't miss this year's peaches, nectarines, pears, and apples. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market has artisan foods ranging from fabulous bread, olive oils, balsamic vinegar, marinades, tea blends, to hummus, and handmade pastas. Browse the artisan area for handcrafted gifts. Start your day with friends at the market. They're here to greet you year-round, Wednesday and Saturdays, 8:30 till 1, at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun. Stand up to bullying with Community Matters. Attend the Upstander Revolution event on Thursday, October 3rd at La Rosa Tequileria and Grill in Santa Rosa. Join them from 5 to 7:30 p.m. for nibbles, no host libations, student speakers, and a silent auction, all to support Seeing Their Safe School Ambassadors program in every school in Sonoma County. Purchase tickets at community-matters.org/events. Proudly sponsored by Amaturo Sonoma Media Group, W Real Estate, and Mechanics Bank.
Every moment is just for you at Graton Resort and Casino. Go all in on exciting gaming action or celebrate and explore 12 great restaurants, 6 bars and lounges, nightly entertainment, and more. It's your moment right in the heart of Sonoma wine country. Staycation in luxury, from our beautiful rooms to our world-class spa and fabulous pool with cabanas. Book your stay today at GraytonResortCasino.com. Your moment awaits. See you there.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
It's Steve and Glenn in the KSRO Greenhouse. So glad to be joined this morning in the KSRO Greenhouse with Marion Parker and John Shribbs, co-authors of the Petaluma Wetlands Field Guide, a Petaluma Wetlands Alliance publication. It's only been out for about 4 or 5 months, and you can get this book either direct from them. We'll give you the website again, or a number of Copperfield's books, too. They've been appearing around Sonoma County promoting this wonderful field guide that's so evocative of where we live and what we should learn more about. John, you took the photos for the plant material in the book, is that correct?
Yes, I started doing that. That was after Marion came to the board and said, oh, let's do this book. And she said, we have this 1,000 pictures that were donated to us from the family, Bob Dyer, who we dedicated the book to, one of our dedications. He produced like 1,000 pictures. That was his good pictures. That's not his bad pictures. The 1,000 good pictures that he took over 30 years at the park. And so we have this stockpile, this archive. So we started using that. And Marion said, let's do this field guide. And then all of a sudden I said, well, how are we going to do the plants? And I says, I don't have very good plant pictures out there, especially of what we have. And I said, whoops, I better get started. So about a year and a half ago, I went out there and took thousands of photographs, and all digitally, and then finally found, and then was able to come up with photographs for all the plants.
It is such a labor of love, and the clarity of the photos, it's easy to identify.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So many guides like, well, it kind of looks like this. There's no mistaking, I think, if you see one
right.
of these plants, which
right.
is great.
We've tried to make it as friendly as possible, so that the book is designed for larger pictures, minimum text, but give you a good amount of text that describes the plant, or describes the bird, mm-hmm. and a little bit about it. We try to make it a little bit friendlier, not just a technical description mm-hmm. in scientific terms. We try to use as much common lay languages and minimize the you science do. Terms mm-hmm. and keep it short with the picture as the major identifying unit in there.
I'm yeah. keeping it in my glove box in the car from now on.
Yeah, good idea.
Pauline, welcome to Garden Talk live at KSRO. What can we do for you on the show? Hi.
Good morning. I just don't know where to start, but I guess I'll start with yesterday. I came home in the evening, and our 20 to 30 foot tree was on the ground. We were so happy that it didn't hurt anyone or fall on top of our roof. And it looks what appears to be a fungus on the root. But to backtrack, we had a guy, the guy that usually prunes our trees, come out a couple of months ago to prune our three trees that are in the backyard on the side by the sidewalk. They're about 40 feet tall. He needed to trim them because they were close to the wires. So he said that it looked like our trees had gotten a fungus, and they needed to be, we needed to remove all the junipers that are around them, which our sons did last week. And the neighbor, apparently one of his trees fell. He had a fungus, and now we're wondering, oh, so his recommendation was that he needed to inject them and then just watch them. But yesterday really scared me that, to me, I mean, it's going to be costly to inject these trees every year and watch them versus falling over, you know, on the street and hurt. I don't know which direction to go. And I was wondering, do you know a doctor tree that can come out and check besides our tree person? Not that we don't trust them. Do we leave them and do that, or do we just yank them out and just start all over?
What trees are these, and what fungus, and what are they injecting?
So, number one, tell us what trees specifically you're talking about, what fungus they, if they told you the name of this fungus, and what they're planning to do, in why are they injecting this? Are they claiming that this is going to cure the tree? Give us those three answers first.
Oh, my God. I'm not the tree person, but the three big ones in the back are ash trees. They're about 45 to 50 feet, and I don't know what stuff they're going to use on them. I just know this is what they told my husband. I'm only the third person, you know, but there was something that they would inject to hopefully kill this, quote, fungus that the trees have. And I don't know the name of the fungus. I can get all that information.
That's okay.
Call next week.
We don't need that.
Are they
right
Modesto
now.
Ashes by any chance?
I'm sorry?
Are they Modesto ash? Does that sound familiar?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, it's difficult for me to tell you any information since I don't know what this looks like and this and that and the whole circumstances surrounding it. So I suggest to you to call one of the certified arborists. I mean, we've had Fred Fry from Vintage Tree Care on our show several times. I would give him a call. He could tell you what's going on with the trees and what to do and if this injection of whatever is going to help or not. So if you want a second opinion, call Vintage Tree Care, Fred Fry,
and get the answer. Tell him that you called us on Garden Talk, that Gwen suggested a certified arborist to do a real evaluation of the trees.
And he's also a tree worker, and that's his business, and so he's very knowledgeable.
And we understand your frustration and your fear and your anger about being given this huge bid, and this is supposed to cure the tree, and your roof almost getting damaged also.
Yeah, and, you know, is it something that could, you know, is there something you can do proactive besides the injections? Maybe there's soil up against the tree that's causing the trees to rot down there, this and that. So seeing is believing. So, you know, and if you sent me photos and this and that, I am not a certified arborist anymore, so I don't want to take any liability as to tell you what to do. So that's why I'm suggesting you get somebody who can go out there to your home and see it, and then, you know, that way you have a second opinion and you'll know what direction to go.
So would you do that for us, Pauline? Would you?
I will.
Okay.
Okay.
It's Vintage what?
Tree Care. Vintage Tree Care. Fred
okay.
Fry.
So a couple of months ago, we had someone come install new lawn because we redid our lawn because we hadn't been watering just like everybody else. And half of the lawn just was always sickly. And I kept telling my husband, even though he watered it and took care of it, I would tell him, you know, you need to tell a company to come remove half of it because I think it's got a fungus or it's sick.
Or
and
maybe it's getting... Was that part of the lawn getting too much shade?
No, I think that maybe the tree that was had the roots on the bottom, maybe had the fungus and the lawn just couldn't get green. I don't know. It's an effect that it started with our neighbors. Now we have it. And so, no, this is what I needed. I'm going to call this person. I'll tell him and I'll tell him that I got the name from you guys.
And let me know what you've come up with, okay?
Thanks for the call. And we understand it can be very overwhelming. You have a number of vintage trees 30-40 feet that are suddenly dying on you. 636-1350. We'll hope to get a call back from Pauline. We have several calls online, but I also want to talk about the book a little bit more. The, where to start? I guess for me, doing the gardening show, the plants were the most interesting. Mm-hmm. I know nothing about birds, except you're the bird expert, is that right, Mary?
Well, I wouldn't call myself a bird expert, but I'm good at researching them. And I had help from several expert birders who have belonged to the Petaluma Wetlands Alliance for years.
And who did the writings about the mammals and the amphibians and the invertebrates?
That was me.
You did all that.
Yeah, I handled
also.
The critters.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely remarkable. And didn't you get a lot of school kids going on these tours, these docent-led tours?
Oh, yes. And John, as our PWA president, can speak to that a little bit better than I, but for years the PWA has provided on-site environmental education, particularly for third graders. It's a really great age for kids who are still kind of into nature, and they go on field trips. They have classroom education as well.
It's so good to get them when they're young.
Yeah, for sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, and more in tune with nature generally. But if you want to talk more about classroom education as well,
right? So we do those as a regular classroom. We also have on two Saturdays, the second and fourth Saturdays, we have tours. A couple of our very experienced docents come out, so we can have, and then you can call up and we can actually find a tour guide for you if we can. But we like to have the second and fourth Saturdays come out. We have a very experienced, and these guys are more naturalists and have been out there for years and years and can tell you about things, I would never know, because they have experienced it. So we'd have a wonderful education for both the third graders and for the public available.
And is there opportunities for volunteers to come out and pull weeds with you, Mary?
Always. I've pulled more bristly ox tongue than I care to remember. That's how I got started with the PWA, but obviously I liked it, so I'm still there.
Okay, so we actually have a docent program,
yes.
And we have a training. So starting up in January, so if someone would like to join us, to become members and then join us, it's almost free class. You just pay like a few dollars for the, we have to reprint the manual for you. Uh-huh. And it's an 8-week course, and you come in for all morning for about 3 hours, 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock. It starts in January, uh-huh. And we teach you, this is one of the purposes of the book, is to help with that class and to teach everyone the basics of what wetlands are and about the plants and the animals, and to become a docent and to help us out. So you can help us out in education, you can help us out in the actual maintenance, and there's various other ways. We have lots of needs out there. We have folks, if we have someone that helps us ship the books, we have someone that does secretarial work, and we are all 100% volunteers. So we're always looking for more help. Right now, one of my projects I'd like to see is building up an outdoor interpretive center so that we have a bunch of kiosks that have 30-year-old material in it all around the park. Yep. And so I'm hoping that if we can get some volunteers and a coordinator for it all, that they could actually help the public and even students and professionals come in and start adding materials around to all the kiosks.
Let's take a question from Eric, who would like a word with us. Welcome to Garden Talk live at KSRO. Hi, Eric. Oh, did Eric not stay with us? Eric did not stay with us. Oh, I'm sorry that you didn't stay with us, Eric. You just dropped. Okay, you know, we've got a lot of email questions too, Gwen. I think I want to take one that came in next from Peter, who's asking about citrus. Some of my citrus trees are starting to turn yellow and leaves are falling. Any recommendations at this point? Are they supposed to be turning yellow and leaves are falling at this point?
Well, sometimes you'll see the older leaves starting to turn yellow and falling. They've done their thing over the years and they're too old to continue, so they'll fall off and the new ones will come on. But if most of the leaves are turning yellow, then no, that's not a good thing. And it could be a watering issue. I wouldn't worry about a fertilizer issue at this point, but maybe dig down around the base of the plant, go down a few inches and see how wet your soil is. Is it in the ground or is it in a container? It could be that the soil's too wet for too long, and that will cause leaves to turn yellow. But, like I said, if it's just the older leaves turning yellow, don't worry about it. They've done their thing, and they're just going to make room for more leaves.
Okay, why don't we take this email question. Would you get this one from, let's see, who's this?
I'm looking at Peggy with her thornless blackberry.
Oh, yeah.
She wants to know when to cut it back, how to cut it back and when.
Yes.
So thornless blackberries, they grow like crazy. You can hardly kill them. If you want, the canes that had set fruit on them, you can cut those to the ground and leave all the new canes that haven't done anything, haven't produced anything, and leave those for next year, which then they will produce some fruit. Sometimes people just cut them right to the ground and start all over again, and then they come up. So this plant that she showed us looks like a nice size moderate plant. If you have branches, canes that are growing out in all directions and are like 20 feet long and going nutty, you can cut them back to about 3 feet, 4 feet or so, and it's too late now for them to produce any more berries. But if you do that after they finish setting their fruit, after you finish picking the first set of berries, you can cut the canes back and they'll send out more canes from that, like you would a rose bush, and it'll send out a few more fruits, and there you go. So, or you could leave the whole thing for through the winter, and you'll see what canes have died back, which ones are looking pretty sad, and you could just cut those down to the ground and leave the new ones. That's what I do, because that's okay. The easiest way to prune.
So there's your answer, Peggy. Thanks for contacting us. Let's go to Eric's calling from Windsor. He's back with his question about his prickly pear. Hi there, Eric. Welcome to Garden Talk.
Hi, Steve and Glenn.
Morning.
I've got a prickly pear, and it's if anybody knows anything about this, it's just beyond me or anybody I've talked to so far. It's dying right now. I mean, I'm going to have to. It's about 15 feet or more tall. It's a huge. It's about 25 years old. And it's getting these white cloth-like spots all over it. But it's just, it's like a fungusy stuff, and if you scratch it, it bleeds. It turns red, just like blood, and bleeds. But it's like wool. It's like a wool all over the, intermittently all over the prickly pear from the top to the bottom. And it's just, and it dehydrates it, turns the skin yellow, turns the leaves yellow and they fall off, and it's just so sad. I'm just going to have to take it down today.
Had someone call a few weeks ago or a month ago or something with that same issue, and I don't know if that was you or no, it must have been somebody else. Then
it could have been me.
I suggested getting a big magnifying glass and look, and you can get a little stick or something and poke into that fuzzy stuff and see if you see any creatures moving. It could be a cottony cushion scale. It could be woolly apple aphids. It could be mealybugs. A number of these insects that suck the juice out of the plants. And they have all that cottony substance on them to help protect them. So you,
you
know, so, and if you said you're rubbing it and this, you know, stuff's coming out.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds to me like, well, I don't know. I'm not 100% sure, but it could be just an insect. But to really identify it, you need a magnifying glass. Because even those of us that have the best eyesight, you know, sometimes you can't really see them moving around. But you'll see the insects moving. And if they are insects, they're difficult to control because, like I said, that cottony substance on them protects them from sprays and stuff. So you then have your hands full as far as controlling them. But it's 25 years old. It sounds like it's on its way out. You could take a cutting of that, take a piece of that prickly pear and put it in some cactus soil and grow. I would do a few of them just in case that one dies, or just go and dig up part of the plant that's not affected, get another plant from the nursery. But if you can't get a hold on this problem, just take the whole thing out and then replant it with your new cutting or another plant or whatnot.
Gotcha.
Because there's nothing really,
do that.
I mean, you could spray an oil on it, but then that's going to cause some damage to your cactus, and then it's going to look even worse. So, you know, you don't have too many choices, I'm sorry to say.
No, I think it's time. Do they live much longer than 25 years?
Oh, it depends. They can live forever. They start to look really ugly, you know, and funky looking, but you know, you decide whether you want to attack it. And
I remember down at Burbank Park down there, there used to be a really beautiful giant one down there.
Yeah, I remember Rachel was telling us about that. But that also got old, and it came to the end of its lifespan. So good luck, Eric, okay?
Nice to talk with you. We'll take a break. We'll come back and continue our conversation with Mary and John. They are the co-authors of the Petaluma Wetlands Field Guide, wonderful book that will help Well, I think it will ignite your passion to explore the marshes and creeks and surroundings of Petaluma and help preserve this very precious resource that we have. One of you win an autographed copy of the book at the end of the show. 11:05, we move from the greenhouse into the KSRO kitchen with Chef John Ash. We'll continue our calls in just a moment. You can also shoot us an email, steve@ksro.com. We're also giving away a pair of tickets to the big Sonoma County Harvest Festival, the 45th annual. It is next Friday and Saturday. We'll be taking the show live on the road once again out to the Sonoma County Fairgrounds for that big event next Saturday. A pair of tickets to give away to one lucky Garden Talk listener at the end of the show.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
Hun, I was thinking of expanding our outdoor living space with a motorized retractable awning.
I thought you wanted a patio cover.
I did, but then I saw these new retractable awnings in action at Sonoma County Sunrooms. They're sturdy and the quality is top-notch.
So, retractable awning, huh? Sunshine and a covered patio? Sounds like something I could get behind.
Hi, this is David from SoCoSun. Our design experts will work with you to create the perfect look for your home. We have so many options to help create your new favorite room.
You're right. One of these awnings will work great. What a wonderful way to expand our living space outdoors.
And it'll help add equity to our home, and we can still have it done in time for summer. Let's go check out the showroom.
And maybe we can stop for dessert on the way home.
Call to schedule a consultation in-home or at the Sonoma County Sunroom Showroom. Sunrooms, patio covers, and retractable awnings. Sonoma County Sunrooms on Santa Rosa Avenue just north of Todd, or online at SoCoSun.com.
Hey, Sonoma County, thank you for making Creams Towing the number one rated heavy-duty towing company in Sonoma County. Creams Heavy Duty Towing has the largest fleet of medium and heavy-duty rigs in Sonoma County and have been around since the 70s, so they're doing something right. Creams Heavy Duty Towing is on the road 24/7. Got a big rig stuck or need a four-wheel drive tow truck? Creams has the knowledge and experience to tow any and all large trucks. Their goal is to get you back on the road and home safe in the shortest amount of time. Need an RV towed? You guessed it, Creams Heavy Duty Towing can do that too. Their Class A drivers are fully insured and certified in heavy duty towing. Don't scream. Call Creams, 707-588-1250. Creams Heavy Duty Towing, 588-1250.
Are the results of your advertising arriving too slow? Could your restaurant business grow if your menu specials pop up on users' smartphones near your location when they're hungry? That's what we do at Waterdrop Digital. We handle the details, you get the results. WaterdropDigital.com.
Hi, Bennett Valley and Santa Rosa. I'm Kristeny, the new owner of Bennett Valley Pet Center. Please bring your furry family member in to say hi, or bark or meow, as the case may be. We would love to meet them and you. We carry great brands of dog and cat food, from Taste of the Wild and Natural Balance to Signature and Origin. We have a huge treat wall with cookies, unique bones, toys, and frozen goodies. Come down to the pet store and we will spoil your pups with treats and fun. Bennett Valley Pet Center on Yalupa next to CVS.
With Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast, here's Daniel Trucios on the KSRO Weather Watch.
Sunny skies for today, high 73, 63 along the coast with more wind out there. Clear skies tonight, low 45, 47 on the shores. Mainly blue skies for Sunday at 67, 61 in Bodega Bay. Partly cloudy though on Monday at 68, 60 along the coast. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
Take as many calls as we possibly can and also emails on this Saturday edition of Garden Talk. 636-1350. Marion Parker and John Shribbs in the KSRO studio this morning in the greenhouse, the co-authors of the Petaluma Wetlands Field Guide. You can talk with them or address general gardening questions to both Gwen and me this morning. Susan from Petaluma, welcome to the show. What can we do for you this morning?
Hi there. I am knowing that the Petaluma Garden Club has made a donation to PWA for getting these books out. Can you talk a little bit about that? And maybe also, since we're on radio, describe the book a little bit, because it's just such a cute book.
Yes, the Petaluma Garden Club generously donated money to the Petaluma Wetlands Alliance so that we could give each participating teacher in the third grade education program a free copy of the book. And that was very generous of them. And what was the other question?
Well, you've described the book very, very well, number of color photographs, right. How many color photographs?
Yeah, there's 200 species that we have in there, each individually identified with a color photograph.
And it's a perfect, because it's about a 10-inch by 7.5-inch book that will easily fit in your glove book, and it's easy to access wherever you are walking around the marshlands. You can go to the different sections, whether right.
It's even grass. If you notice, there's color coding on the top.
And color coding on the top of the book.
For each section.
Yeah.
And the garden club here in Petaluma, with the donation, that's our next book signing that we're going to do.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's coming up on, I think it's the 14th of October. So you can always come in and join there. We've done about 3 or 4 different book signings so far, and I think we just completed a cycle. But if there's a group out there, Mary and I are both happy to jump on out and visit with a group and maybe and talk about it some more in more depth.
Have you been to the Santa Rosa Garden Club yet? Have you
not yet?
Maybe after hearing you on the show today, they will solicit you to do a talk too. And Windsor Garden Club, have you been to the Windsor Garden Club?
Not at all.
There's lots of
opportunity out there, and so we're both willing to go.
Yeah. We actually had a high school in Petaluma reach out to us, and ask us to make an appearance. And I think we'd welcome more interest from other schools because this is an educational project above and beyond anything else, and we're happy to talk to students and teachers.
So, Susan, thank you so much on behalf of the Petaluma Garden Club for your call.
I'm delighted.
Thanks. Good talking with you. 636-1350, if you would like a word with us. We have, a couple calls. I'm not sure we'll go to. Oh, let's take Judy's call from Windsor, California. Judy, what can we do for you this morning? Welcome to Garden Talk.
Hi, good morning. This will probably be an easy one for you, but I have a small shrub planted in a ginger-shaped jar, and I need to transplant it. It's overgrown it, but because the top is narrower than the rest of it, I don't know how I'm going to get it out of this. I hope you have some clever hints.
Yes, I grew a few plants in these rounded-looking pots, and then the day came where I needed to transplant them, and there was no way those plants could get out. So what I did is I took a really sharp, strong butcher knife, not something that you would cut with your bread or anything, some outdoor tool that you don't use in the house, and I just cut around. I wet the root system first, and I cut around and around until I finally was able to pull the plant out. So I basically did a little root pruning. And this time of the year is okay. I mean, I'd wait another month for the weather to really cool down. All right, Judy? So that way, you're looking at late fall planting, so the temperature's cooler, and because of the damage that you've done to the root system, you plant it again, and that way it'll have the cooler temperature to get the root system going, and you won't kill your plant. Okay? Because, when the temperature's too hot, you don't want to be cutting all those roots, and, sometimes the plant just doesn't make it. So wait until it cools off.
That makes sense.
Okay, yeah, just cut as little as you can, but you'll see what you're gonna have to do. And depending on the plant, sometimes it's hard. It's pretty hard to cut through those roots, but a serrated knife works really well. It might take two people to do the job, but that's my suggestion.
At least the widest part is only a third of the way down, so I shouldn't have to go deeper than that to get it out.
Perfect. So. Yeah, perfect.
Okay, well. I've pondered this for months, books, and I finally thought, well, why am I pondering when I've got you as a resource?
Right. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, have fun.
Nice talking with you, Judy. Mitch has a question about, it appears, something to do with a marsh, so let's get him on the show. Welcome to Garden Talk with our special guest. Good morning, Mitch.
Good morning. Nice to talk to you all. I want to preface this by saying I've been a life member of CWA and helping supporting over 400 wood duck boxes on three refuges in the Lambert area. But I am an ardent duck hunter, and I was curious if there is access via the refuge system or by boat to hunt ducks in the Petaluma Marsh area. I've not been there. Used to hunt ducks in the bay, but that's a long gone thing. So that was my question.
Okay.
The wetlands within the city limits are protected. I have seen and heard hunters on the river south of the territory that we're talking about. John, do you know more about that?
Yes. In fact, we have lots of folks that go out to Schulenberger, and they'll hear gunshots going off, and they'll call in the police once in a while. So there are duck hunters that come out. And if you look on a map and actually type in a wildlife refuge areas in the wetlands, they're all these areas are not accessible by foot.
Right.
If you get in a boat and go down and Petaluma River, which is actually a slough, but at high tide now because it's kind of filling in a little bit in certain areas, there are several areas out there where you're allowed to hunt. So they're all designated on a map. There's a three or four specifically named areas that you can go out there. So if you're interested in hunting some ducks, that is allowable.
It is. And where would you find that map? In this book?
I'm not going to find that in that book. Okay. So we don't promote it.
Okay.
But we have Ducks Unlimited has actually helped us out with some grants. But Ducks Unlimited might be a resource. But also if you just in the web, you can just type in wilderness or wildlife areas in the Petaluma Marsh. And you'll find a map that actually will designate some of that. And then you can look it up. I think the Fish and Game have maps that you can go for, which shows you where you can go to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. Fish and Wildlife would be a good resource. I should mention that many of the species of birds that use our wetlands can be either threatened or endangered. So do your homework before if you decide you want to hunt. There's also, we're in the fall migration season now, and a lot of these birds are protected by an international treaty called the Migratory Bird Protection Act. Mm-hmm. And so I would contact a professional organization to find out what your appropriate behavior should be.
And one of the species we're starting to struggle with is, of course, the European mute swan, the biggest beautiful bird out there. But it's an invasive, non-native species. And it pecks and destroys and does all sorts of things to all the smaller birds. Mm-hmm. And so it dominates. And so now I was in one spot and saw 80 mute swans in one spot over at Schulenberger Park, and they don't belong there. They don't belong here in this whole area. They came in over 30 or 40 years ago, and they got started, and now they're everywhere. So if you're a duck hunter, how about some mute swan recipes?
Thanks for your call, Mitch. We only have a few minutes left, but give us your hit list. What's the number one weed we should be actively trying to eradicate from the marsh system?
Okay, right now there's a brand new weed that's been coming in that's traveling all over the world, that's been invading the entire world right now, and that's called stinkwort. Its scientific name is Detritia graveolens.
And it made an appearance in the book.
And it did. And we have actively, over the last about 4 or 5 years, we noticed it started to show up at in the park. And it's unfortunately, it's showing up all over the county now. I'm going down the road and spotting it. And it says it's picking up here and there, and it's all along the roads and hasn't gotten into the fields as much, but is about to. So this is not only scary for us right now, but also for our entire county that this weed is coming in. It's unique. It's a wonderful monster plant. It's like if from an alien that's come in and taken over, because it smells. It has oils in it. It has a waxy coating. It grows this time of year. It's actively growing. One of the few plants that is very light green. You can look at there. It's a bright green. It's like, wow, this is an ornamental. It looks lovely right now, and it grows up and it has tiny little yellow flowers. and it has seeds. And then what happens is either if it's on the path, dogs pick it up along the fur, the seeds, and carry it down the path. And then the wind takes it from there. And fortunately, it's in patches. It has a specific little ecozone that it kind of likes in between the wet and the dry areas of the park. So we've just spent about 40-50 hours hand pulling this plant out of Schoenberger Park, but it's also all over Ellis Creek right now too. But you'll see it all along the roads, and there's a few plants like that that have come in recently. Greater Ami is another one, Queensland's Lace, but you'll see them along the roadsides. And these are plants, this one particularly is the new one, the new invader, that is expanding rapidly everywhere. It needs to be aware of.
Thank you. We got it quickly.
Oh, just it's also poisonous to livestock.
Oh.
So farmers,
well, another way to get rid of it.
And also, if you pull it, you have to be careful because you have long sleeves and gloves, because if a lot of folks will have a dermatitis rash if they get near it or touch the oils on it. So and that's why we're scared, because it's the since it's toxic to wildlife, and we have a habitat that we want to, for the endangered species, particularly the saltwater harvest mouse, that I really want to get it out of our Schoenberger Park marsh area, which is supposed to become a habitat.
We'll take a break. Coming back after this, we'll give away some tickets and an autographed copy of the book.
Skikos Law in Santa Rosa wants you to know there are many misconceptions regarding PG&E's bankruptcy. Don't let misinformation stop you from filing a wildfire claim. Skikos Law is a local firm with national experience. We help wildfire survivors understand their options. Here are some details you should know. PG&E will stand trial for the Tubbs Fire. This means that survivors of that fire can file claims against PG&E. Even if you've received an insurance settlement, you can still file a claim against PG&E. This is not a class action lawsuit with settlements paying pennies on the dollar. As more survivors become involved, our community will have a louder voice in the courtroom. The claim deadline is October 21st. If you have any questions, please contact Skikos Law at 757-7610 or visit skikos.com. That's 757-7610 or skikos.com.
The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market is bursting with wonderfully fresh local fruits and vegetables from your favorite farmers and ranchers. There's an abundance and wide variety of heirloom tomatoes, early girls, beefsteak, sun golds, and more. Don't miss this year's peaches, nectarines, pears, and apples. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market has artisan foods ranging from fabulous bread, olive oils, balsamic vinegar, marinades, tea blends, to hummus, and handmade pastas. Browse the artisan area for handcrafted gifts. Start your day with friends at the market. They're here to greet you year-round, Wednesday and Saturdays, 8:30 till 1, at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun. KSRO, the Smart Train, mental health professionals, and leading North Bay companies have joined together to help those in our community who struggle with emotional pain and thoughts of suicide. Please go online right now and learn the warning signs of suicide at suicideispreventable.org. If you or someone you know is struggling with thoughts of suicide, call 1-800-273-TALK. Together, we might just save a life today.
So we are down to the last minute or so. John, Marion, what's the best website to get information about the Petaluma Wetlands?
Okay, we come to our website, which is thepetalumawetlands.org, and we had a wonderful Tim Fleming helped design it for us. We have lots of great information, and there we have a lot of the pictures. We also have a drone videographer came in and helped us out, so you can actually see the wetlands from the air, which gives you lots of little patterns. And also the book is for sale on the website.
Fantastic. Your two favorite numbers between 1 and 11. Mary, and you first.
5.
John, you second.
7.
Gwen, numbers attached to those names?
7 I put for Pam. Was the first caller.
Pam, you've won an autographed copy of the Petaluma Wetlands Field Guide. And caller number 5, whose name is that?
That was caller 11, that Judy from Windsor.
Judy has won a pair of tickets to the Sonoma County Harvest Fair. Congratulations to both. Judy, you can pick up your tickets here at the radio station. And Pam, you can pick up your autographed copy of the book. Thank you both for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Keep
thank
us in the loop. Us. Let us know where you're going to be appearing so we can promote that on the show.
We'll do.
Nice meeting both of you, John and Marion. Thank you, Gwen.
Thank you, Steve.
See you next week at the Harvest Fair.
Okay.
Bring your wine glass. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Coming up next, In the Kitchen with Chef John Ash and our special guest coming up to visit us from San Francisco, The Sweets of India. This is KSRO Santa Rosa.